A very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 2nd of July, Thursday class. So the year 2020. Now, before we start, Yanta was asking a meditation question regarding his meditation yesterday. So he was sharing with us that when he meditate, he is aware and at the same time conscious. But I think what happened was he was not clear about the difference between awareness and being conscious. So maybe I will explain a bit so it will allow people who have not developed a clear understanding like Jayanta to have the proper understanding so that when you meditate it will help you, it will make your meditation better or easier. So the problem with understanding awareness and consciousness is you have to understand you may be conscious of life, but you are not aware. You don't have sati within. You are not aware within. So the difference between awareness and consciousness is awareness is before the knowing. Just that nature aware. No word, no concept, no aggregate of mind, nothing. Just aware. That's why you are sensitive. Your mind is completely quiet without thought. But this state cannot come about immediately because most people don't have the spiritual faculty. You are not able to develop the stability of your life is not in order. So most people live a heedless life of disorder. And because of that, the mental hindrance are very active. So when you lack spiritual faculty, you lack the stability of mindfulness. Most of the time, you are lost in thought. You think a lot. That's why mental activity, proliferating, the thought is actively arising and passing away. So that is the main reason. When you understand this, then meditation becomes easy. That's why I say you just have to relax body and mind, then maintain awareness. When you maintain awareness, the sankhara can still be there, thinking, oh my, let it move. If you don't give it any more attention or any more meaning, you just let things be, let whatever that arise and move, let it be, then it will slow down. Then finally it becomes very quiet because it doesn't have any more mental energy to sustain it. It's just like when you are burning something. When the fuel is no more, you don't feed it with the burning fuel, then that flame will slowly become weaker and weaker, then finally it will like die off. So your thought is the same because it's energy based. If you do not actively give it that thought energy, then it cannot think. Most of the mundane mind to arise the emotion, then sankhara activity cannot arise. So when you meditate, relax, of course, easy to understand body and mind. Completely relax, you are at ease. Then maintain awareness means what? Not using the thought to try to be aware. That one is the thought maintaining the what they call it, the conscious state. So when the thought is actively trying to be aware, that is not awareness. The awareness is don't have any thought. Just stay with that nature. But initially very difficult. Like I said, the thought is still actively moving. So when you are the thought moving, you don't go and get yourself involved or entangled with it or thinking further, because that is the conscious mind trying to understand or relate to thing or whatever. So don't analyze, don't give you any, don't do anything. Just be a silent observer, witness. Whatever thought arrives, let it be. The mind is restless, so what? Let it be. Understand, without the spiritual faculty, it will think a lot, it will be heedless. So all this activity of mind is a result of your daily life, which is not in order. You lack spiritual faculty. You lack mindfulness. You lack the ability to be calm, peaceful, and aware within. So when you understand all this, when you meditate, you just let it be. And find out what happens when you don't give it any more mental energy or thought energy or attention. All this will slow down, until your true mind, the original mind, which is just aware, it will surface. But when thought ceases, the awareness arises. There is a talk that I shared, one of the Thursday talk, I think it's in the audio file, the YouTube also. What is the difference between awareness and consciousness? That one, I delivered a very good sharing, very detailed and very easy to understand. In fact, that one, that video was most viewed so far. And there are a few very good comments from foreigner, whom I don't know what. They say it's really amazing. They explain here. And so easy to relate to and understand. So always remember, you may be conscious of life, but you are not aware within. Means most of the time you are heedless. You are not aware. Everything you do, actually your thought process move faster than your action. And normally if you are not mindful, you cannot see. Yes, you think and plan your speeches on. You don't speak spontaneously through understanding. So when you do that, all of your action is from memory. You check with your memory, your knowledge, your views, opinion, your conditioning. Then only you try to act out of it. So if you do it that way, you can never understand what awareness is. When you do that, your sankhara activity is active. You fail to be aware. Man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are aware without thought, means silent, with the moment to observe what is going on in life. Or think if you are lost in thought, heedless. That's why meditation is to reverse this habitual tendency of heedless thinking. Just relax, maintain awareness. Don't try to think or don't think. But it's very difficult to ask the one that think a lot not to think. It's like the kid. If they like to go out and very curious, you tell him, hey, don't be curious, stay at home. I tell you, the last thing they will do, they will rebel against you. Unless that, then your thought is the same. Throughout the day, he has been thinking heedlessly, wandering off and doing all these funny things. You have to train. Train means like the dog. Sit. Then you show the action. Then the dog follow. Then you say very good. Feed the follow. So the thought, similarly, you have to train. And when the thought understand that when it is not heedless, it becomes beautiful. Then you will know how to use the appropriate thought to live life. And thought become right thought, wholesome, virtuous. no more the wrong thought, the heedless thought. That is what meditation is. So through observation, silent awareness, you can understand. And last session, Tuesday class, you remember I explained? Awareness is the wisdom energy. Space within thought, without thought, that space is awareness. And that is the wisdom energy. So meditation is to have more and more movement of this awareness, which is without thought. So hopefully with this, you understand that when you meditate, you just relax and maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything, silent completely. And let the mind quiet down. Then you can be like poaching, maybe within. It still took poaching almost half an hour to reach that state, shift of consciousness. And aware of that, because she has the luxury of time to do the meditation at home. But for you, you can do it within 40 minutes, 45 minutes also is very good. Spiritual faculty, actually 1 or 2 minutes you can be in that state really. It's not difficult. I remember when I went to, the moment I sit, my mind already straight away in sati. Without thought, just aware. Oh, then you can meditate. Because throughout the day is already like that. Just aware. Most of the time. Hardly think. Only think when need to arise. Okay, we are off the line. Then I will give you 30 minutes of silent inner awareness meditation. Okay, you can do it now. Just for support. Relax, maintain awareness, then 24 hours and trust. The essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha are as follows. The Apamada Bhaga, these are the 20 very important Apamada Bhaga. Apamada is heedfulness. So the section on heedfulness. They are Dhammapada verse 21, 22 until verse 40. So 21 until verse 40 is all on heedfulness, Apamada Vaga. And the first three are most important. Dhammapada verse 21, 22 and 23. I believe by now most of Kayanamita are familiar with these three Apamada verse. They are the most important. To develop the meditation, you have to read these three Dhammapada verse and understand them. Because the Buddha, within the opening Dhammapada verse on Apamada, he stated this verse 21. He said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die. The heedless are as if dead. So from this particular Dhammapada verse, you should understand that if you want to really develop the understanding of the teaching or the meditation, you must have heedfulness. Because without heedfulness, the Buddha said, you don't stand a chance, you are as if dead. It means spiritually dead. You cannot understand spiritual teaching and you cannot become enlightened or weak. That's the reason why heedfulness is so important. Then he continued on with verse 22. He said, distinctly understanding the big difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, the wise one will intend on heedfulness. They dare not develop heedlessness. So when they do that, they will rejoice in the rhyme of the Arya. So it means the moment you intend on heedfulness, you are destined for enlightenment. You will rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas, means you will be there with them and rejoicing in that rhyme. Then Dhammapada verse 23 define what heedfulness is. The Buddha said heedfulness means if you are able to develop this constantly meditative mind, the constantly meditative, ever mindful and steadfast one, means if you stick on to these two practices or cultivation, to train your mind to be mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful, then use it to cultivate the meditation that is taught by the Buddha. That's why constantly meditative. So constantly meditative means constantly cultivating the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is training your mind to be heedful, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So heedfulness has two components. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. That's the reason why I said if you cannot develop the training of the mind to be ever mindful and constantly meditative throughout the day, you don't stand a chance, which means the daily mindfulness is a must. And this daily mindfulness must be very stable until you are ever mindful throughout the day. Then use that trained mind to constantly cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So Dhammapada verse 23 states, the constantly meditative, ever mindful and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana, which is the enlightenment, the awakening, the realization of the unconditioned. So to realize Nibbana, you must have heedfulness. That's why the constantly meditative, ever mindful and steadfast one, they will realize this supreme bond-free Nibbana. So this shows to us as cultivator how important heedfulness is. So all meditation that doesn't lead you to heedfulness will not be able to develop the enlightenment that the Buddha described. So that hopefully, when you have the understanding and clarity, your whole of meditative training is to train your mind to be heedful first. When you are heedful, you are already home, destined for enlightenment. So meditation is not difficult in that sense, because to train your mind to be heedful, you only need to do two things. First, train your mind to be mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Once you have this, you are home, then use it to meditate. Cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, and you are destined for enlightenment. So a lot of people who doesn't understand this, they fail to do the correct meditation. They go and do all the other thought-based meditation most of the time, not realizing that they are not training their mind to be heedful. They are not following the advice of the Buddha. Then they come out with method, techniques, and all the object of meditation. Then they use the thought to note, actively focus, concentrate. That is not the Buddhist meditation that the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught us mindfulness, heedfulness. So this essential Dhamma is very important. That's why I want to re-emphasize it. Then the second essential Dhamma that you have to understand are the Four Noble Truths. This is the essence of the Buddha's teaching, especially the Fourth Noble Truth, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. You have to go through them, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. You must understand the Noble Truth of Dukkha. Then the second Noble Truth, you must understand the cause of arising of Dukkha, which is craving, born of self-delusion. Then the third Noble Truth, is the possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now, the noble truth that explained to us the cessation of dukkha. Means nibbana can be realized in the here and the now before you die. Suffering may not be when you have this wisdom. Suffering can end. So the realization of nibbana is possible. Then the fourth noble truth is the most beautiful. The Buddha said, not only enlightenment is possible, realization of nibbana is possible. He even teaches the path that leads to the end of all suffering. So he said, if you cultivate this noble eightfold path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So why do we meditate? We meditate to develop wisdom born of the enlightenment. So when there is wisdom born of this meditative enlightenment, your mind will be liberated. You will not suffer anymore. That's the reason why the Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then after that, within the Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths, all the other essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught us, they are actually spin-off from there. Take for example the five hindrance of mind, the five spiritual faculty, the seven factors of enlightenment, paticca samuppada, dwelling. Then many other essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught, they all came from the Four Noble Truths. Then even the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, they are also from there. The five daily contemplation is also from there. Because the contemplation come from the First Noble Truth reality mainly. Then the Buddha introduced the five daily contemplation. The first three are connected to the first four reality of the First Noble Truth. Birth, old age, sickness and death. That's why he said we must contemplate to develop the initial wisdom with regards to the physical body. That's why he said every day reflect, contemplate. This body of us or ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. Where this one goes the way of nature, it has its characteristics of impermanence, leading to suffering. You attach, you cling, you grasp, and because it's impermanent, it's non-self, therefore not real, empty. So the first three contemplation is part of this. Then the fourth contemplation is about separation. That is the fifth reality of the First Noble Truth, separation. Separation from our loved ones leads to suffering, the Buddha said. Separation from our prized possession, the things that we hold on to dearly, also leads to suffering. That's the reason why the Buddha said, every day you must reflect. All that I own or believe I own, whether it's my loved one or my prized possession or things that I hold on to, cling on to dearly, they were separate from us one day because they are dependent originating condition arising. When condition cease to be, it cease to be. Or when your breath stops, your identity erased, you cannot own anything, separation still has to happen. So all this reality, they are part of the First Noble Truth reality. And then the last one is about the law of karma. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of the karma. So this one comes from the Noble Eightfold Path, first path factor, right view, right view in regards to the law of karma. So when you understand this law, what must you do? Well, our entire life depends on karma. So we need to take care of karma. How do we take care of karma? We have to avoid all evil, do good, and purify our mind. And this is the advice of the Buddha. That's how the teaching comes about. From the Four Noble Truths, spin-off, the first right view. Then how to avoid all evil? What constitutes evil? That's the essential Dhamma. So when you understand what constitutes evil, then you reflect, what are the moral conduct that leads to evil? If you don't keep your precept, you don't have moral conduct, then you will create karmic negativity. Because this moral conduct prevents you from arising the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So all the five precepts, you go through them, you reflect, you contemplate, and you investigate. Then you realize the Buddha is very wise. This five precepts is very important, very basic. Because once you violate them, it constitutes major evil. And your karmic nature will fall. Your life will be afflicted. Suffering will follow you because of your karmic conditioning. So the karmic friction that arises through your wrong action, wrong speech, and wrong thought that give rise to karmic negativity will bring about negativity of karmic friction that will bring about suffering and misery to you when you are born again, or even before you die this time, you may reap some of the karmic effect or conditioning. So the law of karma has its great significance is because the Buddha knew if you don't take care of karma, you are going to be miserable. Your life is going to be afflicted and you are going to have a lot of suffering as you go through life. That's the reason why is it the fifth contemplation, you must contemplate it daily, then wake up and tell yourself, if karma plays such a great role, I must go all out not to allow my karmic nature to fall. I must take care of karma. If you take care of karma, karma take care of your life, because this is a nature's law. So keep the precept. That's the advice of the Buddha. That's why he chant every day. After you recite the salutation to the Buddha, Namo Tassa and all those things, then you take refuge, Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Then repeat, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, then Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Then for the second time, Dutiyampi, you go for refuge. Then for the third time, Tatiyampi, you go for refuge. Then after that, what you do? Renew your precept. That is where you have to be very serious. You must understand what this precept means. We undertake the training rule to abstain from doing all these things which will lead to evil. So if I abstain, I will not commit karmic negativity. Then my karmic nature will be beautiful. Then I don't harm people, I don't hurt people, I don't cheat people, I don't deceive people. And because of that, my karmic friction will not have any of this negativity of my state. Means there will be no condition for my nature to be cheated, to be harmed, to be deceived, to land up in such miserable states. So all this understanding is very important to enable us to improve our life, to change our life for the better. That's how you progress. When you understand, you cultivate following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, means keep the precept. then to meditate, to develop the right view and the wisdom to liberate your mind, then your life will transform. You will have more and more of this karmic fruition, which are of wholesome nature, beautiful karmic fruition. That's why you cultivate love, compassion, virtue, right thought. No more negativity or action, speech, and thought. That's how your life become beautiful. Your karmic nature become beautiful. You reverse them. And when you keep your precept well, and when you really meditate, the virtue born of keeping precept will give you the good karma, the good life. Then the wisdom born of the purification of mind, meditative training, the cultivation will awaken you and free your mind from all suffering. So wisdom and virtue will be developed. That's how it will improve your life, transform you. So your form and mind will become very beautiful. Then you get to live life beautifully, wonderfully. Especially the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. You get to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. The third phase of Dhamma, which is to live the life of an enlightened being, to reap the result of your hard work and your cultivation. Because there are three phases of Dhamma, the Buddha said. First is Pariyatti. The first phase of Dhamma is Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. When you learn them, you develop the understanding. Then the second phase is Pativeda. Patipati. After Pariyatti is Patipati. Not go for Pati. Patipati in the Pali word. Means you put that Dhamma into cultivation or practice. After you have learned the teaching, you must put them into daily practice or daily cultivation. That's why Patipati is to put the teaching into practice. Means you have to cultivate the teaching until the teaching become part of you. You hold the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path teaching, the Four Noble Truths teaching. Then you become transformed. You become enlightened, awakened. Then after that, the third phase of Dhamma is the fruition of what you have done. You get to reap the fruit of your hard work under the phase two of Dhamma. That's how you actually get to live the life of an enlightened being, Pativeda. And that will be the most beautiful part of your life. But not many people have that condition, because it's not easy if you don't put in the sincerity, the faith, and the perseverance. Means you don't diligently with the faith cultivate. But if you are diligent, sincere with the faith, and you cultivate, you persevere, then it is easy, not difficult. It depends on your seriousness, your faith, your understanding, whether you are committed or not. So these essential Dhamma are very useful. Then the last aspect of the essential Dhamma is the three types of right view, born of the first Noble Eightfold Path factor. Right view with regards to the law of karma, karma niyama, then right view with regards to the law of, the second one is the law of mind, actually, chitta niyama. So chitta niyama is under the dwelling teaching, Paticca Samuppada, how your mind functions. Then the last one is Dhamma Niyama. Dhamma Niyama means the right view with regards to Dhamma, which is the teaching of the Buddha, the Noble Truth, all other truth in nature. So the most essential part of truth are the Four Noble Truths. That's why they are the essential Dhamma. And it's the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Okay, so with that, I will explain. Eh? And this essential Dhamma must be clearly understood in order to progress along the path of Dhamma. So you have to really develop clear understanding of the essential Dhamma. Otherwise, you cannot move. You can't really meditate or progress. The reason being, when I first came out to share the Buddha Dharma during the year 2004, I thought what living being need was the Dhamma, the teaching. But after I started to share, I came to realize that very few people can really understand the true Buddha Dharma. Because at that time, their basic understanding of the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha was still not there at all. So when I contemplated on it, when I contemplated on it and inquired into it, I developed this inquiry. How can living being develop the understanding of the true Dhamma, the essential Dhamma? Then this understanding comes to my nature. This is the reason why nowadays I reverse the teaching to focus on the essential Dhamma first before teaching the true Dhamma to new people. So this happened about 8 years ago, 8 or 10 years ago. So I start to reverse the way I teach. The emphasis is on understanding the foundation, the essential Dhamma. Especially the Four Noble Truths is threatening, and the few essential Dhamma that you need to understand. Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23. Five mental hindrance, the five spiritual faculty, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then the paticca samuppada. So if you are observant, mindful, aware, if you attend Tuesday class, Thursday class, or even Sunday class, you will see, especially Thursday class, where the whiteboard is always there. And what are written on the whiteboard is the essential Dhamma. On meditation is the four support. That's it. Every time my sharing evolves around those essential Dhamma, and from there is spin out the teaching. And the teaching can be very different, although the essential Dhamma is the same. The right view with regards to law of karma and all those things. So when I reflected and inquired, then I realized this is what I must do so that living being can understand. Then the teaching actually take off. Then more and more people starts to understand the essential teaching, the essential Dhamma. Then they relate it back to the meditation. Then only they came to know that they didn't do according to the essential Dhamma. Because most people are attracted to all the famous method and technique as taught by so-called famous monk or famous teacher. Or popularly accepted one. And from there, that thing evolved and become what it is today. That's the reason why a lot of different sects of teaching come about. They divide the Buddha's teaching, the Dhamma, into so many types. The division is really something that you can see clearly nowadays. So it's not easy to understand all this and reverse all this because it has been there for so long. And most of them are method techniques based on thought-based meditation. The true mindfulness, awareness-based meditation, very few people understand. Because the reason being, what is sati, mindfulness or awareness, also people cannot understand. So if you cannot understand what that thing is, then how can you teach? And the only instrument they are familiar with is the thought. That's why they use a lot of thought-based instruction and share and teach, leading to thought-based meditation. That's why you have all the noting, the focusing, the concentration, note this, note that, do this, do that, then recite, chant. And sometimes they even teach you how to verbalize. Not thinking, 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 wondering, 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 pain, pain, pain. And people become so gullible, not understanding what this thing is, and they go and do, thinking that when they do this, they verbalize, it becomes vipassana. If they don't verbalize, it's not vipassana. For those who understand, it's the complete opposite. The moment you verbalize, you are not in sati. Your mind is not silent. Your mind is heedless, chattering. Why can't people understand that and then reflect, contemplate, and don't do all those things anymore? Because that will not lead to the Dhamma, which is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. Your thought-based meditation is limited by the instrument you use, which is thought. If you use thought to meditate, then how can you realize a state of enlightenment that is beyond thought? It's very obvious, isn't it? That's the reason why the Buddha said you have to be mindful, to be aware, to be heedful. You have to silence. And all these are related to the teaching, the four foundations of mindfulness, anapanasati, and all those things. So it's all about mindfulness, mindfulness of the four foundations, mindfulness of the breathing, anapanasati. So if you trace back the essential Dhamma, you will not debate, you will not make such mistake, because people never inquire, never reflect, and they can't find teacher or people who have the understanding to share with them the real Dhamma. And because of that, we have such situation as what we see nowadays. But it is not too late. The moment you understand, you switch, you progress very fast. I read on. We are not able to be aware of the silence of nature because of the phenomenal world. When you live in this existential world, because of the phenomenal world, you can hear a lot of phenomena arising within the universe, the entire existence. And this phenomenon is the one that distracts your mind. That's why we define phenomena as anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So whenever you perceive, you create phenomena. That's why the phenomenal world of form and consciousness make you very heedless, very busy. You think a lot. You perceive, you attach, you cling, you give meaning, then you stir your mind, you react. That's how living beings become heedless. So not understanding all this will lead to downfall, will lead to heedlessness. And the heedless are as if dead, like the Buddha said. So when you are heedless, when you are not able to be aware of the silence of nature, you are lost in thought, entangled by the phenomenal world. Then what happens? Then your mind becomes clouded by thought, by the sankhara activity that is going on. In nature is the vibration and the activity of mind that thoughts create. That's how you become heedless. You think a lot. This is the reason why most of you can only perceive the silence of nature only in the middle of the night, when everything is very quiet, you have the essence of mind. So in the physical world, you have to wait till all the car, vehicle activity, the vibration become like reduced until hardly any, especially middle of the night. But if you live in a city, then maybe a lot of these night birds, they still have vehicle going around and a lot of activity. But if you live in the rural area, outskirts, normally the middle of the night is very quiet. But when you are sensitive, when you can silence your mind, do you realize even the night is not silent, not quiet? Because within nature, there are a lot of vibration, the insect sound, the chirping of the bird, especially early morning before you wake up, or when you wake, the chirping of the bird, they are very loud, very clear, even in PJ, a lot. Then, of course, in the rural area, last time, Kampung, I remember, the real chicken, so you have the crow, I don't know how to pronounce it, the morning, the cock, they will make that noise, which is very nice, and it reminds you that you have to wake up already. Then there is also a lot of vibration that starts to come in when the morning break, the break of dawn, when you start to see the sunlight. Then you see people coming out with the activity. But middle of the night, when the traffic sound all become very much less, then you can feel that silence and the sound, that quietness. The more peaceful part of the day. That's the reason why certain students, they like to study at night. Especially the younger generation. My two children, they like to study at night. Because at night, easier to concentrate and focus. You are less of this disturbance from phenomenal world. Then the other aspect is the mind. When it comes to the mind, when you meditate, it's the same actually. When your sankhara activity slow down and become very quiet, it's like middle of the night, when all the traffic sound no more. You can experience that quietness, that shift in consciousness. That's the reason why meditation is relaxed, aware, and let the mental activity, sankhara activity, slow down and cease. That is like middle of the night. The car vibration, the traffic vibration, all the other pollution, sound pollution, or voice pollution, or vibration that used to be within the phenomenal world, they all of a sudden cease. Then you can feel the quietness, the peace. That is how you perceive it within nature. But when you are doing your meditation, it's actually the same. When your thought is less active, sankhara activity slow down, then it becomes very quiet and very still. Then you will perceive that awareness nature, that silent, without mental activity, without thinking, without thought, the space, the awareness, the wisdom energy. And that one is capable of awareness, direct seeing, awakening. That one can meditate, that one can observe silently, and that one can understand many things. He will understand exactly who you are, what this form and mind is. You no need to study, actually. Technically, no need to study. But the essential Dhamma of the Buddha's teaching will help you understand very fast, much, much faster. Otherwise, it will take you a while to understand. That's the reason why during sasana, enlightenment is very easy. Without the sasana, there is no teaching, so not so easy. Unless you meet enlightened beings that have gone through and developed the understanding, then they can guide you, they can share with you, they can teach you, they can train you and guide you and allow you to have the understanding to progress. Otherwise, it's not easy. Like this sasana, Even though my nature has developed the understanding and the cultivation from the past, but because the sasana exists, I find it so easy to share with people and teach. Otherwise, do you know what will happen or not? If there is no reference, let's say, nothing to refer to, no Buddhist teaching, no Buddha's teaching, then I share. Do you know what people will say? He is not even a monk. He is just a lay person. And what he teach, he got no basis. At least now, I can use the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach. Then the way I understand it is so different. You all can investigate on it. Because it will stand up to the investigation. But if you do not have the understanding, that's why a lot of the commentator, they go and comment or they try to like explain to you what that teaching is. Do you realize over the past thousand or more years, all these commentary books and all those things, if they are still the truth, authentic teaching, we should have more and more enlightened beings, isn't it? If the method, technique that were taught are correct and authentic, like science, we would have a lot of discovery, awakening, but we are not seeing all these things. So what is the conclusion? Means all this teaching is no longer authentic, or very few are authentic. Most of them has deviated. That's the reason why it failed to awaken people. It failed to create more and more awakened beings. You take science, for example. The last 30, 40 years, we progressed so fast. Why? Because scientific breakthrough lead to understanding and progress. The last 5,000 over years before the last 40 years, our progress was very slow or hardly any until the advent of the 19th century. We are still very primitive even after 1960. So you can see when scientists have breakthrough, they progress within the scientific field very fast. So spiritual progress is the same. When you break through the understanding of this spiritual teaching, you will have more and more enlightened being. And it is happening if you all can understand this teaching. There are already quite a number starting to develop the understanding and the awakening. So this is something that you have to reflect and contemplate to develop the faith. And hopefully with the sharing by those who have already done it, you should develop the faith and go all out to cultivate the daily mindfulness, daily religious routine, the one that with the song they all together with Po Cheng, even that Brother Chong, even, and many other Kayamita, Alicia Leo. So listen, develop the faith, then motivate yourself, then really, as Kayamita, sincerely walk the path of Dhamma, develop the faith until it's unshakable, then persevere, just do. Don't try to know. Relax, maintain awareness. Realize that self nature, that true nature, that awareness nature, until it becomes very clear to you. Then you will progress. Then no need to ask questions. Just the silent mind, the awareness nature will understand. It will awaken. Like what Po Cheng shared with you all. It is so amazing. Everything just happened like she didn't do anything. The only thing she did was follow the instruction and do accordingly until the awareness nature, the sati, really arise. And it was so marvelous when it arise. Where the whole mind becomes so quiet and so still. No thought, no mental hindrance, nothing. Just the awareness nature inside. And that nature becomes so sensitive, so mindful. Capable of developing understanding, then she can see a lot of things without thought, without words. and she can understand how people become like that and how she become like that, then she can stop the mind. The understanding, the wisdom is so clear, and the transformation just happened without her doing anything, just realizing that true mind. That's why without that wisdom, like awareness, mindfulness, you cannot awaken, you cannot realize, you cannot see. Without mindfulness, you got no sensitivity, no clarity. So the three evil roots also, you cannot see them. How can you root them out? How can you abandon them? You can't even see them. You are not even mindful that they are there. It's only when you have the sensitivity of mindfulness, then you can be aware of them. And when you are aware, you become different. Because this is really like direct seeing. Seeing it happening in your own form and mind. Then you ask yourself, my life, do I want to live my life this way? In a heedless way. If I don't want, straight away I determine to straighten my view, to change for the better, to heed the advice of the Buddha, to keep my precept. And I need mindfulness to keep my precept. And I need mindfulness to investigate Dhamma. I need mindfulness to be heedful, to meditate. So mindfulness is a must. You have to stabilize it. Then with mindfulness, you can realize your true mind, your nature, and arise the meditative mind. Then only you can meditate. That's why sati is life. Without sati, you are as if dead. Because without sati, you can never be heedful. And the heedless are as if dead. So sati is most important. Everything needs sati. Sati is awareness. Before the knowing, the silent, that nature within, the unconditioned, that one that doesn't create, accumulate, doesn't stir, where there is no word, nothing, it's just away, finish. So that nature need to be understood. I read on. Consciousness creates the world and the continent and the universe. The knower become the living being. We are ignorant and delusion. The knower grabs onto the form and mind, thinking that it is real, and they are what they are. Hence, becoming the traveler in space and time. So the form and mind that grabs at all the phenomenal world becomes the traveler in form, in space and time, wandering in samsara, following the law of karma. Certain Dhamma book talk about be with the knower. And this one is just to explain. If you have meditated, developed the cultivation, you will know there is no knower, no one to know. What is knowing? The knowing is knowledge from the brain, from the memory, from the perception. The moment you perceive, you are no longer aware. That's why there is no such thing as a knower. Or any atta at all. There is only an awareness nature. That nature which is aware, and that one is not a being. That one cannot come out and live life. That one is not what you think. And these people call that the knower. How can you call that the knower? That one doesn't know anything. Well, there is no word, no concept. It's just aware. Awareness is before the knowing. How can there be a know? The moment you know, you perceive through knowledge, through the mundane mind. So that part people don't understand. But surprisingly, a lot of people are so fascinated with the word. Stay with the knower. If you really understand, that is not the correct expression. Stay with that awareness nature. Is not a being, so it's not a knower. And I read on. The reason why the Buddha explained, in the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see. That's why there is no one to know anything too. Yeah, it's just that pure consciousness that arises before the content goes in. There is no one to see because everything is conditioned arising, dependent originating, and they always arise and pass away following nature's condition, like the physics experiment. You don't need a God to create the lighting up of the bulb. It's all nature's law. Hence, just be aware and don't get involved. That is why the mind that has wisdom will not stir. Who get involved? Eh? Who get involved? The thought, isn't it? The mundane mind, isn't it? That has self-delusion, isn't it? Otherwise, that nature is without words, without any concept. It's just aware. It can see things as they are. So the one that gets involved is always the egoic mind, the mundane mind, the thinking mind. So when that mind is active, you already get yourself entangled. That's why the mind that has wisdom will not stir. You understand. Why do you want to react to sense experience or stir your mind to arise the duality of like and dislike, the fear, worry, anxiety, and the emotion? There is delusion, isn't it? Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. Why you still want to stir your mind and react and want to argue with people and still want things your way? There is delusion, ignorance. So see this and understand them clearly. Then the next paragraph explanation is even more beautiful. Thought are just thought. They are neither good nor bad because it depends on the user of thought. If the user of thought has wisdom, then thought becomes right thought, virtuous thought, and they are so beautiful. So use thought appropriately. We are arising only the right and wholesome thought, virtuous thought. Right thought brings about harmony, understanding, and wholesomeness. Whereas wrong thought are thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your suffering, and your misery, etc. These are all wrong thoughts. Thought that make you violent, emotional, selfish, deluded. These are all wrong thought. So wrong thought has the evil roots because there is self-delusion, sacrality, the egoic mind. They will condition evil roots. They will condition the mental hindrance. When we are born with this five aggregate of form and mind via our karma, we must understand that it is just a vehicle and tool for us to come to this universe to use and to live life. The body is like our physical tool or vehicle that can take us around. That's why I call it a vehicle. And the mind is our mental tool for us to use to live life, to experience life in the here and the now, and also to develop the cultivation. So together we call it a human being, which we think is permanent, a permanent unchanging entity that we can grasp onto as the me and the I, hence the self-delusion. When we develop the pure awareness based meditation to connect to our true nature or true mind and awaken to the truth, to see the unreality of all this form and mind, then we can understand clearly what this form and mind is. Then there is no more self-delusion or sacrality. With this wisdom connected to our form and mind, the form and mind is then no longer deluded. Hence, it will not grasp, not cling anymore, thereby freeing the mind from all suffering. It will have the enlightenment factor of equanimity, born of wisdom within. Hence, no more stirring of the mind to afflict them again. It will be at peace with all things. It will know how to live life, and there is no more delusion to worry about life anymore, because you can clearly understand, sorry, because you have clearly understood that the five aggregates of form and mind of this segmented life of yours as a human being is not real, not you, because it's dependent originating, condition arising. It has the universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. So this is the ultimate understanding. Okay, then we move on to the important notes. The four important support needed to develop proper awareness-based meditation are relax, maintain awareness, means awareness, and relax, aware. Then 24 hours to maintain the awareness, and trust the nature, no interference from the thought process. When the heart area cannot open up, it is very difficult to progress along the path of Dhamma. So the bowing and reverential salutation to develop the Sada, Virya and Sati, spiritual faculty, to open up our heart area to make it sensitive to receive spiritual energy needed to connect to our nature within is very important. So this one I may have to explain a bit. That's why every time we fold our palm, we pay respect, we do reverential salutation, we rejoice, we salute. There is actually a very strong faith energy or spiritual energy pointing towards our heart. Because when we fold our palm to pay respect, we always fold it in front of our heart. Then that faith actually can send in the energy. And that is the one, if you have very strong faith, the energy can actually open up your heart area. When I use the word open up, I hope you understand it's a literally that word open up means not your heart open up. Means the English word literally, like certain area inside your heart area, you start to feel the energy going in. That is like the area open up, it becomes sensitive. Initially, most people don't have that one, until your faith is very strong, your spiritual devotion, the devotional spiritual energy is very strong. When you are very strong in your faith, your sadha, your virya is very strong. Then later on, when your sati stabilized, that one become more and more clear to you, the opening up at your heart area. I realized in the early day, that was the first thing that happened to me. Well, I pay respect a lot. Wherever I go, I told you, I go to a temple or a way place, the first thing I go is the shrine, I pay respect. At home also, I pay respect. And I do a lot of bowing during the cultivation time. Because my teacher, where my whole family take refuge, he has a condition, he said, you must finish your 10,000 bow within 3 months maximum. So I did it in less than 2 months. And that one, every time you recite Namo Ben Si Si Chia Moni Fo, then you bow. Then mindfully you come up. Then again, Namo Ben Si Si Chia Moni Fo, you bow. Makes homage to my original teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha. And I realized when I did that, the mindfulness came. Then the energy also went in. Then my heart area here starts to open up. Then after a year or so, the area become very strong. Like there's the energy here. Then later on, when I returned my sati to there, I realized that time at one stage, that heart area opened out and make me aware. That's why I start to understand when you take care of my mind, take care of you. Means that area become aware. So I was most of the time throughout the day just aware, because that heart area there become aware by itself. Keep on aware. But later on, after 1989 after I transformed. I realized the energy built up there was very strong, very strong. Then also because of my vow that I supposed to receive my last teacher, my last guide, and he from New Zealand, there is no way I can know him or not. Somehow he appeared and I think after 6 or 7 times I saw the sign, but I at that time didn't really need to see anybody. We are Dhamma wise, I already have the understanding. But because it happened so many times, then my nature knew, I don't know who this person is, but I believe I must see him. Because normally 2 or 3 times the sign come, I will go on. This one happened 6 times. That's why I went and see him. And the moment I went and see him, I knew, because everything just happened. Then he showed me the gateway. That's how all my energy can melt inside there and transform my inner nature. And I cut short my training by at least 10 to 15 years. And that was because of my vow. I got on very strange, unique vow. My nature, whenever it arises, a vow to realize the highest wisdom possible at any one time during whatever civilization or world system that this nature may arise. And because of that vow, this last teacher and guide has to come and has to meet me. And I also will understand what he say and what he share and what he teach. Then the moment he showed me the gateway, the moment I located that, I technically don't need him because I don't know what that thing is. Then the whole heart area free. Then the internal transformation happened because my training, the Bodhisattva way, need that thing. And this life, because of that vow, I cut short my training at least 10 to 15 years earlier. That's why at the age of 35, I was already ready. Otherwise, I have to wait till about maybe 50 years old or so, or 50 plus. Then only I can locate the gateway, you know. After I locate the gateway on my own, I still need to cultivate, you know. But now I don't need, because after I locate that gateway at the age of 35, that 15 years that I save, I straight away use it to meditate. And that time nobody come and disturb me. Because 1989 to 2004, exactly 15 years now. That time I didn't come out and share yet, no condition. And nobody know me. And that was the best part of my life because I meditate throughout the day. Technically, I don't need to meditate. But it just happened. It just happened. Then after that condition arise, it's like the nature knew that this form of mind is ready and it has the ability to do that. That's why Maitreya came. 2008 invited this nature to come out. Then 1986, I think when Kuan Yin's nature came, he already knew. That's why the message is you have to move fast. Not much time left, because like Kuan Yin's nature knew, the conditions are unfolding already, you had to move. And from that year onward, 1986 to 89, the book come, the teacher come, the guide come, everything come. Very strange, I didn't do anything. Then like I share with many Kayamita, even recently with my daughter, you look at my house, I don't like statue. I also don't like all this poster, spiritual thing and all the thing. But one by one they come, Xing Qing, Da Bei Zhou, and all the statues. They just arise and never do anything. My nature actually doesn't really attach to all this. But I knew, my nature knew when the sign came, when the condition arrived. These are the things that human beings need, living beings need, Kayanamita need. Yeah, they need the faith. they need all this to trap the energy. Because all these images, especially the one that have crystal, they can actually store the wisdom energy that my nature share. Otherwise, the moment it share, like every Tuesday class, Thursday class, Sunday class, after the class, maybe it will stay there for half an hour or 1 hour. Then it will disperse. And then gone. Whoever who can tap, draw, and take, then that beautiful. But if you can't, it's gone. That's the reason why when the first statue came up, I straight away asked Sui An and Mi Feng, if you don't mind, I will offer this, the Buddha Rupang, to the Thursday class house of theirs for the session. And they say, okay, that's why I received the first one, and then send there. Then after that, there is three, you know. After that, the Tuesday class don't have it. It start to come now. And the Tuesday class one is the best. Not only Sakyamuni, you know, Amitabha also come, Kuan Yin also come. And many, you know. Oh, many. So all this is part of nature's conditioning, nature's law. Whatever will be meant to be, will be. So this is what Dhamma is all about. It will unfold. So have faith, just do. Don't try to know. Things will happen. Huh? Okay, continue. I think finish already. Oh yeah, the important note only up to number two. Yeah, okay. So at least number two one, remember, have faith. Then pay respect, reverential salutation, rejoice. Go to the center of your heart. Understand that? The more you do, better. Bow. That's why the daily mindfulness, very important. Then the daily religious routine. Meditate before you sleep, when you wake up, in between, whenever you are free, your lunch break or whatever. Then when you meditate, first thing you do is pay respect. Then recite, develop the faith. And this faith will create a type of spiritual energy that will open up your heart. Not until your heart open, I realize you are not sensitive. And you cannot detect energy, you cannot draw energy, you cannot even detect cultivator, enlightened being and all this thing. But once that one starts to open up, I realize my nature can detect. Then whenever I'm at a spiritual place, this nature inside there will draw on, you will know one. Then I will know somewhere here, either got great beings nature or cultivator who has that type of nature. Otherwise, my nature cannot draw. So initially, it's you draw from people. But later on, when your nature develop and connect back to your past, then you have that past nature coming back to you. Then I realize other people draw from my nature. But you don't worry. This one is not like a reservoir. You let people draw, it drain your pure energy or it drain your what. This one is the opposite, like the law of karma. The more they draw, the stronger your nature become. That's the reason why a lot of kaya mita, they came to know. Whenever I deliver Dhamma, I like suddenly become the heart area, everything, like I become different. My vibration all become different. And like after that, I got a lot of energy. I no need to rest and all those things. So during the early day, all these things keep on happening. That's why you must have that understanding. Don't try to know. Do it. If you don't go through it, you cannot understand what I say. You cannot understand my sharing. But if you go through it and you experience it, you will rejoice. That nature becomes stronger and stronger when you share. That's why the more you share, the more you will receive. Don't go and think selfishly. Like last time, the ancient day, Kung Fu. If I know 18 steps, I teach you 17. will escape to Daipa Sifu. No such thing one. Because spiritual cultivation is different one. When you are on the path doing it correctly, yeah, those who come and learn from you, unless their path is very exceptional, technically, they cannot be at your level, I tell you, unless they have their path. Because it takes them a long time to have that transformation. Take for example, do you know to open up the heart, it takes almost a year with the faith, full time, you know what I'm saying? If people are not serious, their heart cannot open up. You know how long it will take or not? They will be most of the time wasting their time doing thought-based meditation with not much progress because these are not sensitive. So they will be listening to Dhamma or Dhamma knowledge, thought-based meditation, hardly progress. But when you have the faith, sincerity, perseverance, and your heart open up, you start to detect energy. Then you start to develop the understanding. Then when you do the awareness-based meditation, you progress very fast. You realize what that nature is, what that sati is. Then that time, it not only open up from outside, you know, you will detect the gateway and it go in and it open from inside. You know. That's how you progress very far. And that nature become very different, very strong, very stable. So how can people catch up with you? Unless they are also on the same path and they have their path, like winning. Yeah. So all this, you will understand. That's how the understanding of the cultivation will make the cultivator different. For me, all Kayamita will know. I just share. If you can receive, go ahead. I rejoice. My nature rejoice. But the thing that actually that word is what people are not able to receive all this is because they don't have that condition ready to receive, and very few have that condition. So it's not me or my nature, it's how big your cup is or how far have you developed your cultivation? How much can you receive? Yeah. I gave this analogy quite often during the early day. Let's say you want to receive spiritual understanding or energy. My nature already, because it doesn't discriminate. Every time I share, all these are there. So whether you are a real cultivator or not, make a lot of difference. If you are not a real cultivator, means what? You don't even have a cup to receive it. Do you understand? Well, you are not ready, your heart is not open, you are not sensitive, you cannot receive. That one is equivalent to what? You can only use your two hands, provided there is no gap. They say there is a lot of gap on it, you cannot save money on. True or not, even you close your fingers. A lot of holes on that. You cannot save money. But don't believe that. Huh? Believe your karma. So if you hold your two hands and try to maintain that whatever spiritual energy or water, or maybe spiritual water, holy water, it will seep away very fast. Isn't it? You cannot hold it for too long. Isn't it? So you hardly can receive it. But those who have cultivated a little bit, the heart open now, at least they can receive the cup, at least there's a small cup, and you can keep that cup whenever you need, you drink. Right. So this analogy is very useful. So a real cultivator means it's ready. They can draw, they can receive, they listen, they understand, they progress very fast. That's how the cultivation differ. It's not about me discriminating, no. People who don't know me, or like Po Cheng from so far, even Kai Wen, from nowhere, they can receive without seeing me. Especially Kaivan, 1 year ago, he started to listen to the sharing on the YouTube. Then he went to the website. Then after 1 year, a lot of things happened to him. Then he himself told Jin Hao and me that he cannot wait already. That time was MCO time. He must contact me via the gratitude. the respect and all those things. And he had so much joy because he went through that cultivation and he went through that experience. Then he knew this one, very few people can teach. So he even told Jin Hao, he can't even find people to talk to with this style of understanding. That's why he has to come and see me. So finally he contacted me and I checked. I asked him a few questions. Then he said he stay in Cheras. Then I say I will get Jin Hao to see you. Then it connect. That's how he came. And he has came a few times. Then I was told a few kayamita do because of Jin Hao has met him. So all these are the conditions behind. So if you have faith, you persevere, you have the sincerity, the Dhamma will unfold, things will unfold. You must be taken serious, I tell you. This path demands sincerity, faith, and seriousness. You must go all out. If you go all out, you progress very fast. Like Sister Han Pucheng. You remember what she said? Contemplate on Maranatnusati, death, the urgency. And that one really drive her. Said, this window, she don't want to miss. She go all out, determined. And she just follow the instruction and daily routine, non-stop she do. The five daily contemplation every day. Oh. Then read the Heart Sutta many, many times. That's how people progress. You have to be very, very serious and determined with the faith, sincerity, and you persevere. Just do, don't try to know. Then everything just unfold. Okay? So I'll read on. Number three, just relax, aware, and silence your mind to develop the heedfulness. Then you will progress along the path of Dhamma naturally, following Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23. This one is easy to understand. The four support. Dhammapada verse 21, just now I've gone through with you. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. All conditioned things are impermanent, non-self and empty. Anicchang dukkang anatta. Therefore, strive on with heedfulness. Apamadena sampadeta, as advised by the Buddha. And do not be heedless anymore. Without sati or mindfulness, you cannot be heedful, for sati is life. So if you don't develop sati, don't stabilize it, you will be as if dead. Because you will be heedless, and the heedless are as if dead. Okay, that's all. And we move on to the... Oh no, finish already. Yeah, 10:13 already. We better end. So, sadhu, thank you. So we will open up for meditation, reporting, and Q&A.
Yeah, Raphael, good evening.
Sadhu, haven't heard from you long time.
Raphael.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, when it comes to cultivation, I still feel that I'm lacking so much. Try as I do,
okay.
But I suppose the faith is not strong enough. Do not put in enough effort. To be truthful, okay? I feel that not enough effort is put in.
Correct. You can still motivate.
It's so sad. You know, I feel so sad, Bratio. It's like we know the situation is such that we have very little time, or I should say I have very little time.
Yeah,
but
the window
how to go
closing.
About to how to push ourselves in such a way that we can really diligently do it. All the people who succeed is because they put a lot of effort. Nothing comes
they
about
are
without
serious.
Any
yeah,
effort.
They are
yes,
really
they are
yeah.
really serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can also motivate yourself to an understanding. That's why the contemplation is very important. What is life? Who am I? What am I? What am I doing here? Am I really making full use of my life? What is my priority? Why am I still procrastinating and all those things? So these are the things that can move you. During the early days, I remember when I was Form 4, Form 5, after I know science, geography, my nature already contemplated, reflected. Then there are many things that my nature know what I need to do. That's why after I received that book, Chief Reverend's first edition of the What Buddhists Believe, when I saw the Four Noble Truths straight away, I went all out to develop the understanding and the cultivation. One stop. Maybe different people with different paths, they are different. But you can still create that condition through an understanding. But most kaya mita, you don't worry. Like I used to share with you in the Sunday class. For you to have the parami, to be born during the sasana, born as a human being, come into contact with the true Dhamma, and have affinity with Kuan Yin, great beings and my nature, you are not the simple cultivator. You all have your past. The only thing is you still may not know what your nature is. They are not ordinary cultivator. They have their condition, their time, and they have their parami. So if you can understand that, then you will determine. So what I need you all to understand is not necessarily you must like this guy transform and become very exceptional cultivator. No. What you all need is develop the faith, the sincerity, then persevere. Go into the Bodhisattva vow, understand it clearly, then make aspiration. Determined to have this understanding life after life. Whenever you come or choose to come or have to come. So whenever you choose to come means you already on the path. You can choose to come. But when you have to come means the law of karma take you there.
Yeah.
Then you still have that understanding. You vow to have this understanding. This is to prevent you from getting lost when there is no more sasana like I mentioned many times. This window is for you to close up that gap so that from now onward your karmic nature will all the way be up. It may take another sasana, never mind. By the time you hit another sasana, you have already perfected a lot. The reason why a lot of you all were not able to have that type of nature is because you all have the parami. But you have to wait till the window of the sasana open again, then only you can come. And when you come during the sasana, like our sasana, 4,000-5,000 years, how many births can you take? And every birth you, like this one also not serious, then which segmented life of the sasana can you be serious? Reflect, contemplate, understand that. Then you will become dead serious. Otherwise you will get lost again. During the Dawn Sasana. That's the reason why Maitreya sent my nature to share is to pass this information down, to pass this teaching of the Bodhisattva way down. We are this Bodhisattva way with the right view, right understanding, and the aspiration and the vow is a completely different way where normal Bodhisattva take. We are that one, non-sasana, most of them will not find a way and still get lost. But if you do it this way, because of your vow during this sasana, your merits, your understanding, your parami is very strong. Then you invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to have this type of right view, right understanding, life after life, whenever you choose to come or you have to come, it will be there with you. And you must be serious about it. With the faith is sincere and do it. Initially for the first 3-6 months, do it every day. Then after that, when you're already familiar with the thing, maybe once a day. Once a week. Then maybe once a month. Then when it becomes a part of your nature already, you don't have to do it so often. You can just read through it, recite, Then without that paper, later on when you can already remember and recite all the meaning, it becomes part of your nature. Means that vow has taken firm rooting. Means your Bodhi mind has already nurtured and understand all this. Then your heart there already open. Then like after you come, you can understand. Your nature will open up, but the Bodhi mind will nurture itself and arise. Then the understanding will unfold. It will come out. That's why my nature, when it comes, like everything is already planned for me. I don't have to do anything. It just unfolds. Okay? PG?
Yeah, Brother, thank you so much.
Yeah, this one will help. Yes.
Brother, I feel that we are so lucky to be at this time, at this sasana.
Sasana, you know? Yes. This sasana is very unique, very beautiful. Yeah.
When I was in Penang, I was reading the book on Master Shi Yin, I think.
The 120 years old great master.
Empty cloud.
Empty cloud.
That's his autobiography.
My Si Kong. Because Xian Hua is his disciple. And he's the master of Xian Hua.
People like him go through such difficulty.
Suffering, a lot of
To obtain the Dharma, and even then he remains so humble, so
correct.
Hardworking to
Badu,
set up the Dharma in China.
Correct.
And
he repaired all the temple.
We should be so thankful to people like him. Yes.
Yes, for all the things that happened. But without him, a lot of things will be gone. And our spiritual trip to China may not be what it is today. Very beautiful.
All these great beings, we should be so thankful to
them. Our heart should rejoice and thank them for their blessing, protection, and
guidance.
Sadhu, very good.
Pratil.
Yes.
I already hit my jackpot in this lifetime meeting.
Yeah, definitely.
I must be more diligent.
Sadhu. Really. You're more than hit jackpot. Because you want jackpot money, you also cannot buy.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother.
Okay, thank you so much. I think we better end. Thank you, PG.